Wagwan, everybody. Welcome to the Dis-Afami History Podcast, where we'll be speaking about history and as well family history and how history relates in terms of Caribbean people for the present as well as in the past, and how in the past, what that does and brings forth for what we are going through at present and what we can learn from our history, from our family, and take that moving forward. So I do hope you enjoy the podcast. And if you like it, please ensure to subscribe, like, and review. Thank you.
In today's episode, Professor Rinaldo McKenzie, an esteemed scholar whose expertise lies in the rich tapestry of Jamaican traditional religions. With a deep understanding of the cultural heritage and spiritual practices of Jamaica, he brings profound insights and scholarly rigor to our discussion. So let's have a listen.
Thank you for coming on to the podcast and to speak on Jamaican religious traditions. And before we start, I'll have you just do a brief introduction of yourself.
Well, I'm Rinaldo McKenzie, and I live here in the U.S. in Philadelphia, and I'm a doctoral student at Georgetown University. I'm going to be transitioning to Temple shortly. I'm the author of Neoliberalism, Globalization, Income Inequality, Poverty, and Resistance, which is an erudite analysis of Jamaica's economic analysis, highly reviewed. Get your copies today. But today is actually the 3 years anniversary of the book and my company. I'm the president of the Neoliberal Corporation. We are celebrating 3 years. It's a think tank, digital media company, publishing company, IT, web design company. We provide educational support, and we also provide research. We conduct research as well. So, and I do a podcast. I'm the creator and host of the Neoliberal Round podcast. And I've oftentimes said the Neoliberal Round podcast and the Neoliberal Corporation, they're all about serving the world today to solve tomorrow's challenges by making popular what was the monopoly. And that's a little bit about me. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that, Rinaldo, because I'll put some of those in the show notes so people can click on those links. So nice. We'll start. And then basically, I just wanted to ask you, what was your why to start the research of this topic of the Jamaican religious traditions?
I wanted to start the this research because, well, I was teaching Caribbean theology class, I think it was a year or two ago. And while teaching the class, I asked the students to conduct a research. I wanted to understand who they were as individuals and where they came from and their training and development. But then I realized that the students were not fully exposed to African traditions. And I began to ask them questions about African traditions, and they didn't know much about African traditions. And then I said, wait, I'm going to change the syllabus. Yes. I said, okay, guys, wow, this is absolutely ridiculous. I said, first of all, you're doing Caribbean theology and you are at a Caribbean institution, and you're telling me you have not been exposed to African Caribbean traditions? And I said, wow, no, we got it. So I decided to adjust the syllabus and started to teach them some more about African traditions, and that's how I started, because then I then asked them a soft question about their attitude towards African traditions. And but Jamaica has always had a negative attitude towards Afro-Caribbean beliefs, especially because stemming from our colonial past. And so I wanted, and I believe that theology, spirituality, belief, and faith are important in valuing one's identity. And I believe until we are able to truly value who we are as individuals, then it will continue to affect our development and our growth and our progress as a people. But I say to you, that has always been part of the strategy. In terms of the Caribbean being an invention, and the fact that as new nations with peoples who are historically marginalized, it was within the interest of the former colonial masters to continue to maintain, their advantages. So our education system places value on European traditions. And so when you look at, you know, in terms of religiously, we look down on African traditions. Yes? Yet we've looked down on how we speak in terms of Creole. We look down on our color. The darker you are, then the more you are seen as not as, you're not as valued.
Exactly.
Even to today, there is, so that's one. And the next thing is your attitudes towards faith, your attitude towards Rastafarianism, so on and so forth. So those things are important in terms of valuing our identity and coming together the people. So I wanted to, but this is the 21st century. Jamaicans are well traveled all over the world. Technology is exploding rapidly and bringing the world and people closer to get together. Borders are being dismantled. Okay, there are no borders in a sense. Globalization, fueled by innovation and technology, has created greater exposure. And so my question is, I wanted to understand, okay, has this helped to, in a way, to remove the scales of people's eyes in Jamaica? Are people more embracing of the Caribbean traditions? And if not, why not? So that's the basis of doing the research, as a way to understand and to also to facilitate conversation towards it. And you have to have conversation in order to recapture and to restore. And just so you know, after I decided that I was going to do this research, I realized that the Jamaican government has an open discussion, on legalizing opium in Jamaica, which was great. Now the church reacted by saying, absolutely not. We will not legalize opium in Jamaica. We are against it. And of course, Jamaica is a Christian country. And they said that opium is inherently evil. And of course, I teach a Caribbean theology class and a Caribbean thought class. I've oftentimes said, when you study history, that was always the justification for enslaving the Africans. Africans, they don't have religion. Okay, they're cannibalistic, they're animistic, yes. They're devil worshippers and they are evil. Okay, and of course, they come here with their tradition and that continues to today, that's part of the tradition. And so it was quite interesting to me, intriguing, that the very same, it was as if we're taking the conversation and narrative right out of our former colonial pastor's book and putting it into our book. You know, so I wanted to understand that. And so that's the why of it. So it's long, but yeah, that was my why.
No, that's fine. That's fine, because we'll go into some of that discourse that you just mentioned. So just to kind of give, I guess, what you actually did research or what you're looking into, what were the four or five different types of the Jamaican religious traditions that were discussed in your research?
In terms of Afro-Caribbean tradition, and again, I said, let me say this, when we talk about Afro-Caribbean traditions, we are talking about African traditions coming from Africa and the Africans who bring their religions, but not just that, but we're also talking about indigenous people. We believe that many of the Africans that came from Africa, many of them intermingled with some of the indigenous people that were here, and some of the traditions include some of that. So when you start to study those traditions, then you'll understand. So we looked at obia, which is not an institution like a revivalist. It's not a denomination, but it is a practice. A practice which includes practicing of boiling, using herbs and so on, and chants and so on, in order to ward off spirits. Okay, it involves also praying to the ancestors Prince Ancestor. Some people say Doppy or so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But it really includes those charms for healing and also for balancing oneself. So that's what it's about. But when you study African history, I mean, Nanny of the Maroons, she was an older woman. Okay. She practiced Obia as a way to give her strength, okay, to fight off the Europeans, okay, which led to them securing their victory. You know, when you study Caribbean tradition, I mean, Chris, when you growing up in Jamaica, I would often hear my dad say, I would often hear some Christian people used their Christianity to pray against people and to wish people bad.
Yes.
So to wish for bad or wish bad for people or to curse people, so on and so forth. But there are people who use it. And I say to you, Obia was never used. That was never the case for Obia. Obia was always used as a way. And it originated from the Ashanti people as well. Dr. Bookman, who came from Senegambia, who came to Jamaica, he actually practiced. He could read the Quran. So I'm going to tell you that when you ask me what are the four African traditions that I talk about, the Muslim religion is one, because many people think that the Muslim religion only started in 1960s or the 1990s or so on. The Muslim tradition and beliefs and practices has always been here in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. In fact, the slaves brought it here from the 1700s when Dr. Bookman came here. In fact, we believe that part of the practices included some of the Muslim faith, some of the tradition. And if you look at some of the scriptures, and they talk about the reader man, and then the reader man, the older man, he's going to read he read the scriptures. Because that stems from the influences, their influences. Because when people meet, when cultures meet, there's always a borrow. There's always a marriage between cultures. So when you look at Obia also have some traditions that is European, that's Christian in nature.
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, Obia is going to have some traditions from the indigenous people. Obia is going to have some traditions from Africa and also Muslim traditions as well. Okay. So Obia is one of them. Of course, there is also Jamaican revivalism. Jamaican revivalism is actually the combination of two different traditions. And the Jamaican, and they are a congregation. They have churches all over Jamaica. And in the U.S., there's a strong Jamaican revivalist congregation here in the U.S., in New York as well, in Philadelphia, just so you know. And they have religious leaders, a large following. They operate just as already as some churches operate.
Yeah.
And if you study, you know, and just so you know, have you ever been to a Jamaican funeral? And you're Jamaican, okay? Jamaican funerals, you would always have a night.
Yes.
Yes. And there's always a particular kind of music, or they will hire out some musicians who would play mentor music. Mentor is the music of the revivalists. Okay. People don't realize that mentor music and all night, that's in the tradition of the Jamaican revivalists. Okay. Music was much part of the tradition, Jamaican revivalism. And now Jamaican revivalism includes two groups. One that it involves Zionists that was started in 1860s, and it also involves the Pocomania that started in 1861, and the revivalism started as part of the great revivalism in Jamaica, Great Awakening. There was lots of resistance in the 1860s, 70s, and so on. So a lot of religions, and they draw influences from African traditions and so on. So that's one of the main reasons that many of these traditions were started as a way to give them strength, the African strength, and as a way to, and in a sense, they were organized.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first organized social group Okay, I'm telling you this, right? The first organized social group, protest group, or resistance group, or civil action were these African traditions, okay, in the 1800s that draw on African traditions and beliefs. So the Pocomania belief, the Pocomania, the Zionists relied on, who believed in spirit possession. And so as a way to give them, just as all in the Christian Bible, they believe in the possession by the Holy Spirit, yes, to give them power. And then, but the possession of, but it, for the revivalists, it's an ancestral kind of a possession. Okay. Some people talk about fallen angels. See, for example, the Pocomania, fallen angels, and they're okay. But it's all about giving them strength. It's all about fighting, using, they also practice using herbs and drumming and dancing and prancing and so on, you know, and to invoke the power of God through their ancestors. That's the thing, you know, invoking the power of God through their ancestors as a way to fight, as a way to maintain balance in the world. So that's, and then of course the Rastafarian religion, which started in the 1930s as a result of the Depression. Part of it was influenced by Marcus Garvey and the Back to Africa movement, United Negro, UNIA Association, and the language of the UNIA and the language of Marcus Garvey helped to propel, and not only that, the spirit of resistance. And of course, there was a, you know, the New Deal started, and, you know, the developed social groups were starting, and this idea about empowering people. There is this, that's in the 1930s was quite an interesting year, and the period, the 1930s. So the Rastafarianism started in the 1930s. And in a sense, it was always looking back to Africa. And please remember, you know, many of these religions started in as a way to resist, yes, and to rebel against the status quo, to rebel and to resist the very thing that have them captive. So of course, they Rastafarians don't believe that they don't believe in this white Jesus. They look to Ethiopia as the land. As the promised land, and the Lion of Judah being Haile Selassie or Haile Selassie, Rastafari, whatever the case is. So Rastafarianism was born out of social protest. Listen to what Bob Marley, who is a prophet. Many people think he's a musician. He's not just a musician; he's really a prophet.
Yes,
And he helped to popularize reggae music, and reggae music, just, you know, is gospel music.
Mm-hmm.
It's like God. It's the music of the Rasta. It that's the music where they tell the story of the Rasta, spread the gospel or the good news, in a sense. So reggae music, which started in the 1950s and 60s, actually, but or emerged or became much popular in the 1950s and 60s, and of course stemming from Mento, because Mento helped to influence and scare and so on, helped to influence reggae, and that same music was the music of the revivalists. Okay, and when you start to study Rastafarianism started after Pocomania and Zionist religion, just so you know. And a lot of Jamaican revivalist traditions found its way in Rastafarianism. So just so you know, when you start to study Rastafarianism, you find that people say, "Well, Rastas, they read the Bible." And they use the Bible in some senses. Yes, in some senses they use the Bible because, as I said, they are influenced by, yes, the Jamaican revivalism. Okay, and when you start to study, so many Africans they brought the Muslim religion too, and some of the voodoo and some of the obia has some appeal or format to Muslim traditions. So those are some of the traditions that you when you talk about Afro-Caribbean traditions, yes. And many people would not include that as Afro-Caribbean tradition. Of course, some people may believe the may believe that some evangelical churches, like the Pentecostal church in Jamaica, that we could consider that in a sense an Afro-Caribbean kind of tradition, but maybe 1% African people would say. But it involves a lot of dancing and movement, which is not European. Exactly. Okay. It's not European, and the drumming and so on. So when you start to study the African traditions, of course, many people would not think that Pentecostalism and the rise, that has some kind of influence from African traditions. Yes. So
No, that's great. And because what you mentioned, a lot of them have the connection of to self. It's the empowerment. It's the enlightenment. And as you said, they now came together to create something that was a standard. And you know, so because we normally don't have that. Now, the other, I'm going to say this as a follow-up, because again, even though these were all created, however, because we're dealing with, this is the Caribbean, this was an area that was colonized, these Jamaican religious traditions were not very much so viewed in a very positive perspective from the
Caribbean. Yes, right? That is true.
Can you just speak on that just for a minute?
Yeah, historically, Jamaicans have not had a positive image or attitude towards Afro-Caribbean beliefs. And of course, I talked about that in the pre-session, talking about growing up as a child in Jamaica. Yeah. And I said to you that we were taught to look down on Rastas.
Yeah.
Growing up in Jamaica, Rasta was was a fringe group. Rastas were dirty. Mm-hmm. And the next thing, of course, my brothers and I and friends, when we were traveling in communities and we walked past a house with a bottle, okay, and a table, okay, bottles and tables and so on, and a red cloth and so, we would walk on the other side. You know, we were afraid because we call it the Duppy House.
Yes.
Okay, that was the Duppy House. And I said to you earlier, and I said to you, what we are saying about the fact that Jamaicans have had historically had a negative attitude towards Afro-Caribbean beliefs, we're saying that this is not hearsay or rumor, it is a fact. In fact, that was part of the strategy. That was part of the colonization, okay, to create a kind of disunity, okay? And of course, as I said, the theology is important, because theology not only helps to preserve one's heritage, and of course, when we talk about Afro-Caribbean beliefs and tradition, that's part of a theological understanding, that's part of culture, okay? And so it's important, African tradition have to preserve culture. But it was the strategy to dilute, to kill African culture, to kill any connection, okay, to jettison any connection that the slave, that the Caribbean had with the past. Okay, so of course we know that African tradition is important when it comes to cultural preservation. But it's also important in terms of reclaiming one's past, reclaiming one's heritage, reclaiming one's resources, restoring one's dignity, restoring what was lost. And I said to you, Israel is a nation today because they were able to continue their heritage. They were able to continue their tradition, their Jewish tradition, their practices. So that is important. So of course, our inherited civilization today has not extracted or removed any kind of ban from any kind of ban or disdain or any kind of policy, has not removed any policy that rejects and prevents the practice of Afro-Caribbean beliefs. And of course, I said to you, Obia is illegal in Jamaica.
Yes.
On the books. I believe it's been illegal. I can't remember the date, since 1822 or something in the
something
18,
around that time. Yes, around that time.
Around
yes,
that time. That it's been illegal, and we. So of course, and I say to you, the fact that an education in Jamaica, and we got independence, and it remained illegal in Jamaica. And I say to you, when we got independence, the churches in Jamaica runs the education system in Jamaica, okay, in the Caribbean. The church is highly invested. And of course, many Jamaica, when the government announced that they were going to legalize, they were going to legalize OB in Jamaica, the church said no, because of this argument, because OB is inherently evil. And depending on what books, if you were to go on the computer right now and type in OB, depending on when you read, whatever you read, you want to look at who is saying it.
Yes.
Okay. How are they connected and so on and so forth? Because one, they will tell you, oh, Hobia is concerns itself with the practice of witchcraft. Okay. You know, it concerns itself with attacking people, so on and so forth. But that was the narrative to corrupt something so pure. So of course, I wanted to understand, I wanted to move away from that, so that we can restore our identity and we can become more united as a Caribbean people. Because I said to you, there are people that practice Obia
mm-hmm.
in Jamaica. Of course, there are people that use it for bad, but there are people that use the Bible for bad.
Yes.
Okay. There are people, anything can be used for bad. Okay. But of course, that doesn't necessarily mean you are going to make the thing evil. So, of course, I said to you when I was younger, I would not associate myself with African traditions. They were seen as negative. And, of course, yes, I believe that African traditions were evil. So, and that's been the tradition, and that's the thinking. Of course, I teach a Caribbean theology class. And as I said to you, while teaching the class, I realized that many of the students they're not exposed to Afro-Caribbean traditions. And In fact, I had a big debate with one of my students in my class, and he said, no, my father told me that they obeyed my mom, and that's why she died. And he said, you cannot tell me anything. You can't say anything. I know this is what happened. Okay? Because that has always been the thinking. But that has been embedded in our minds. I've been brainwashed. And I said to you, that's what you think. That's what people say to me. If that stems from a long history of corrupting something so pure, something meant to empower and uplift. So if there are people today all over Jamaica and the world, in the Caribbean, who still look down on Afro-Caribbean beliefs. I look down and, you know, in fact, one time, there are people who believe that one of the reasons why Haiti is a failed state today is because of voodoo.
That's true.
Okay. And there are people who privilege their position. There are people that privilege their position. But I say to you that it is very important for us to begin to study our past and to start to revisit history, because there are people who want to privilege themselves and to continue their dominance. And by putting down your history and promoting their own histories as normative. And of course, it was Immanuel Kant that says what? History is a result of the varieties of human natures and circumstances. So if history is a result of the varieties of human natures and circumstances, then it means that there are people who can influence history for good or for bad. And there are people who have, and that's what they have done with our history and with our religion and tradition. But we have held on to that. So of course, that has been part of the tradition. That has been part of the perception. There's been a negative perception. And up to now, that's what we are taught. Many Jamaica, Jamaica is a Christian nation. So of course, I'm going to tell you this. Will Jamaica ever get rid of its negative stance towards Afro-Caribbean traditions, which is like Obia? I don't know. And I'm going to tell you why. Unless the church gave up its privilege, okay? Because there's also, we have a tradition, a faith, a Christian tradition that says it is the ideal and anything else is a lie. So that is also, we have also been indoctrinated by a faith that prevents us from embracing African traditions.
No, that's true, because it was all that we didn't have a soul at the very beginning.
Yes.
Right? We did, no. we didn't have a soul.
Yeah.
Right? That, so what yes. you said is
that is true, yes. But I mean, of course, that was the thinking. Slaves are animalistic. Mm-hmm. They are cannibals. Slaves are evil. They don't have religion. They don't have a language. They speak some weird gibberish, because Creole is all, when you look at the etymology of Creole, it almost resembles gibberish or gibberish. Yes? So, I mean, and that's part of the justification, of course, that went into slavery. The putting down of your blackness, the putting down of your language, the putting down of your tradition, which also serves as a way to prevent us from coming together and making any claim. I say, I don't know if I said this in this state because I'm confused. I said to you that African traditions, or the practice of African traditions, the Obia, the Jamaican, the revivalism, the Pocomania, the drumming, the prancing, that was part of our resistance. That was the first semblance or evidence of social action and social protest movement in the world. Okay, that was part of the resistance. And so, of course, and I said to you, Nani was an Obia woman, Nani mm-hmm. of the Maroons. One of Jamaica celebrates Nani as the first heroine.
Mm-hmm.
And this Nani practiced Obia, and she drew on the powers of her ancestors, and in order to fight off. And of course, yes, I mean, the Maroons, the slaves, they believed that compared to their colonizers, they were weak, they were vulnerable. Okay, and so they looked to God through the practice of Obia. They looked to that which was external to them to yes. give them strength, to motivate them, to encourage them, okay? And it brought, and the drumming and the prancing and so on, it gave them a sense of hope, okay? Which was supposed to help to drive them now to fight and to resist and to be, that was their resistance. But now, and of course, and that was why it is within their interest, within the British West Indies, for them to make Obia illegal. And so it is quite interesting that today we continue to hold on to that. But as I said to you, it is positive that the Jamaican government has started to have open discussions about the legalization of Obia, because it will help to facilitate dialogue, which will help to correct.
Yes.
Our understanding of and the history of Obia, the history of revivalism, Pocomania, and Muslim religion as well, because that was, I didn't even realize that there were people who practiced and were versed in the Muslim religion in Africa from who came to Jamaica and went to Haiti from early 1700s. Until I started doing this research, it's quite interesting. People like Dr. Bookman. Dr. Bookman was an African slave from Senegambia who came to Jamaica muscular and tracting and versed in the Quran. First of all, you are telling me that there are people from Africa who came as slaves on slave ships. And just so you know, C.L.R. James said that the Africans who came to the West Indies, they were of fine physique. They were smart. They were intelligent. They were militant. There was something about the African, because I'm going to say this in Jamaican.
Yep.
The British and the colonizers from Europe, when they negotiated, when they engaged in the transatlantic guns for slave trade, part of the deal was for them to get the best slaves. The slaves who would have to be able to quickly learn the techniques of sugar plantation. The slaves who were healthy enough and able to cross the transatlantic ocean, which were at the time was dangerous, okay? That was the kind of slaves they needed, many of whom were military brass people, some of whom were part of the chieftain family, many of whom were priests and were intellects and well-fed. Those are the people they brought to the Caribbean, according to C.L.R. James, when you read the book, The Black Jacobins, and when you read Walter Rodney's How Europe Underdeveloped Africa, mm-hmm. How Europe Underdeveloped, and just, you know, when you study plantation economy and how the plantation economy was organized in such a way that would manage, manipulate, and ensure that the slaves are organized in such a way where there is no connection to their past, no connection, and you know, they would put them in different tribes and in with and so on and so forth, because they were property. They weren't supposed to be able to speak with each other. They weren't supposed to be able to organize and fight. If they're okay, they weren't supposed to practice any kind of religion, because they weren't supposed to be able to have religion, because the fact is they were animals. So it was quite interesting. Dutty Bookman came from Senegambia to Jamaica. And I understand he was a voodoo priest, but I understand also he was versed in the Quran. He could read the Quran. And not only that, it was quite interesting. So he not only could he read the Quran and was seen as a voodoo priest, but he was also, I understand, was very intelligent. But he started voodoo or Muslim tradition in Jamaica, but he didn't finish it, in a sense, because he escaped and went to Haiti. And the voodoo became, and then it became polished, because when you start to look at voodoo, yes, okay, almost the same thing in Jamaica. They're almost the same thing, okay? And that is why we know that there is this one thing that connects all of these traditions in terms of this calling on their ancestors for power and for strength. The drumming and the music and the type of music, the music, it's all similar. So, of course, and that is very important. So, of course, he went to Haiti. And what did he do in Haiti? He started a church. Okay. And the church and that church was very instrumental in helping Toussaint garner independence in the Haitian Revolution, Haiti's independence. It was the same obia, the same that Nanny of the Maroons used, and many of these African tradition people you relied upon. So of course, by the late 1800s, they are already out. In 1790. 1804,
yes, is when they were, that's what their official independence.
Right. But towards the late 1800s, what you found was that the English was, and the French, and people were, they were making every attempt to minimize slave organizations, yes, through slave nations. And of course, because of the Great Revival, all these revivals, churches, and communions and traditions was popping up all over the Caribbean and Jamaica particularly. And so that's why you have many of these traditions being outlawed. When you start to study our history, and our heritage, your family heritage, you understand how important it is, your history is. And I said to you, theology is important because it helps to make claim on the past. The Jews are able to make claim. Maybe you can make claim on Crown Land today, okay? When you start to delve into your traditions and your history and to embrace your African tradition, it will take you maybe as far back as to certain, connect you with certain people that you never knew you were connected
to. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, there is definitely power. I definitely believe there is definitely power within it.
Yeah.
And when you walk within that power, it is definitely a different path that you are taking. So
Yes.
I know you mentioned a few of the common themes, but you know, did your research uncover any other common themes or characteristics that were shared amongst all of these Jamaican religious traditions?
In terms of the traditions themselves, not this, well, we know that the common themes, in terms of what connects them, was their relationship to Africa, and the fact that they promote and encourage a kind of African value, or sorry, valuing of one's identity, and then a kind of empowering one to be able to ward off spirits and so on. But in terms of the responses and I've interviewed, we're doing a survey, doing a study exploring attitudes towards Afro-Caribbean beliefs. We have submitted over 150 research interviews. We hope to get about 5,000 respondents interviewing or participating in the study. But so far, what has been the connecting thread in terms of the responses? That's what I want to talk about. And so far, when you begin to delve into some of the responses, many of the people agree that it's important for us to value African traditions because it will help to restore African identity. Because African tradition prioritizes us to look back at our past and to look deep within ourselves. But we have a tradition. The kind of religion that we have in the Caribbean comes from a kind of European tradition, which prioritizes European tropes, symbols, which bears no resemblance to who we are as a people, which continues it. So if I said to you, theology and religion helps to preserve cultural heritage, okay? When you start to look at African tradition, there is a focus on African tradition and African attitudes, many people say, well, that I'm not African, I'm Jamaican, that's the past. But your past is part of who you are as a people, and who you are as a people have been re-engineered to be something else. And who you are, in a sense, the religion that is promoted, the European religion that's promoted, is one that has helped to colonize us, one that helps to demean us, one that continues to promote literature and the kind of faith that promotes features and language that helps us to continue to focus on something other than yourself.
Yes.
So therefore, that is why, you know, Bob Marley talk about emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Bob Marley, and even to today, many people, what has helped to enslave our minds, or this brainwashing, okay, and that continues how we view ourselves and the bleaching, yes, and the fact that we continue to be uncompetitive because of our dividedness, is that because we continue to accept traditions that tell us that in order for us to become part of the right community, we have to be plugged into a kind of faith that speaks to a community, a God of a different race, a God of a different community. Okay. So because, you know, I we it was not until probably over the last 10 years, 10 years ago, that my views towards Rastafarianism changed, because I thought Rastas were dirty, okay? And they weren't good. I looked down on, they were less than me.
Yes.
But the revivalists, the Pocomania, the Obia man. I thought they were less than me, and people who practiced those traditions. You know, Homi Bhabha, who wrote the book, The Location of Culture, talks about who must I be as an individual? Because first of all, it's as if our identity is not original. I mean, Kamau Brathwaite talk about the Caribbean being an invention stemming from colonization and the creolization, okay? But our creolization is important, but yet still, there are those who make it their business to promote, like Louise Bennett and Bob Marley and so on, to rescue and to restore and to capture. But those people are beyond us now, you know. We don't see no Louise Bennett anymore. Rex Nettleford is beyond us. And the church continues to flex their muscle in the Caribbean. But I said to you, you know, when you're in Canada, I'm in the US, but I'm part of it. When I came here in 2006, people were expecting me to look Jamaican. They said, "You don't look Jamaican." I said, what do you mean? You know, how come you don't have no rest? You know, how come you don't have no dreadlocked? How come you don't have any dreadlocks? Jamaican supposed to have dreadlocks. Yes? How come that was part. But at the same time, look at the ambivalence of this. I'm from Jamaica. But remember, you know, I'm Jamaican. I think Rastas are dirty. The very thing that I think is dirty, which stems from my colonization. The very thing that I look upon is the very thing that I must be. Yeah, you see the ambivalence? The very thing that I look down upon. And so, I mean, who was it that wrote that book, who wrote Wretched of the Earth? Franz Fanon. Franz Fanon wrote Wretched of the Earth. And he said that the post-colonial man is a wretched of the earth. Wherever he is a political creature in the global sense of the term. Okay? Yeah, isn't that crazy? So I come to the US, I look down upon something as dirty, yet I am supposed to be that, and I'm not. So what do I do? You know, so it's the cardinal cosmopolitan who must be one thing outside of his country and something else inside of it. And religion has helped to facilitate that in terms of our disdain, our Eurocentric education, our Eurocentric position. In fact, we are an invention. Okay, we have inherited and kept those traditions. So yeah, we have African traditions, but the European tradition sometimes takes primacy, because we are partly to be blamed for that, because we continue those traditions and we see them as the greatest achievement. To be able to speak the King's English, yes, mm-hmm. Or realize a salvation that is European is the hallmark, which continues to promote this kind of tradition of not in black and good.
Well, not only that, it's the disconnection, and we're trying to reconnect to what is our traditions. Yes. And, you know, so far from your research, has there been any, from the perception of the colonial powers that their religious traditions still kind of control the narrative of how things are still viewed?
It's one sense, yes, and another sense, no, in terms of and this, I'm happy you asked me that question, because for two reasons.
Okay.
And I'm taking my time with this answer because I've spoken about this before, I've written about this, and I'm about to release the book about this. But in terms of when you look at denominations in the Caribbean and you start to study where the synod is, where the headquarters of these churches are, these churches are located overseas.
Mm-hmm.
The head offices.
Yep.
First of all, Jamaica still maintains the monarchy, okay, and there is no separation between church and state in Jamaica. So, and if, yes, we elect the prime minister in Jamaica and the Jamaica, but we have had a referendum in the past, and they have voted to keep the king, the monarchy, as the head of state. But the church is the Church of England. Is still the head church in terms of any church that follows the Council for World Missions or Protestant churches in the Caribbean or mainland churches. You know, and if you're a British West Indian country who has the monarchy, the king is the head of state, then the head of the church, I'm so sorry, getting a phone call. The head of the church is the queen or the king, sorry. And the government and who signs in things into law. That's one in terms of ceremonially when you look at the Caribbean, Jamaica, ceremonially, we are still connected to a past that drives, in a sense, help to drive policy or oversees our religious traditions. And you know, and religious traditions also help to facilitate our ethics and our morals, and so that's very important. That's one. The second thing is, I said to you, the head of many churches is in the US or in Europe, which continues this kind of the narrative that not black and brown people can't manage anything, or if you're from the global south, a post-colonial country, a former colonized country, you can't run anything, okay? Or you are at the behest of the... But now, there are some institutions that now have a kind of liturgy that provides autonomy to the local. And of course, there is a move by Caribbean theologians, such as Garnet Roper, the United Church in Jamaica, Cayman Islands. They are now inclusive. A lot of churches are now moving towards diversity, equity, and inclusion. But those are some of the mainline churches are moving towards diversity, equity, and inclusion. But the mainline churches have lost a lot of ground. They're not growing. Many of them are dying out. The church that has the sway in Jamaica are more the evangelical churches, the Pentecostal churches. And many of them are ultra conservative, and although many of them are headquartered in Jamaica, they still have inherited a faith tradition that opposes African traditions, which is quite unfortunate. So, although you asked me whether or not the colonial, there might be external institutions from our colonial past that continue to have any kind of dominance or administration over in terms of faith or traditions or whatever. And I say to you, not necessarily, but that when you study when you study companies and so on, people talk about when you start something, then a company or whatever, the next step, you develop reputational value and you develop a certain kind of a system that creates a kind of a hog's wheel where everything is just systematic. You create it. Okay, we talk about, say, for example, we talk about de jure factors of racism and de facto factors of racism. A de jure is it could be systematic or it could be indirect. Okay, that's what has happened in terms of traditions. Some of our what happened in the Caribbean is that we have inherited a system. We have an inherited system that continues the colonial control. But so there is no direct control. There is no direct control of our faith traditions and so on and so forth, in a sense. But what we have inherited is a colonial past that continues to drive our traditions. Say, for example, I said Obia is illegal in Jamaica. That is from the colonial past. Jamaica is an independent country, okay? But yet still, we still have on our books laws that tells us how to think and how to treat with our African tradition in our past. So in a sense, no, but yes, because we have inherited a system. And I said to you, what has separated some Caribbean countries from others like Haiti and Cuba is that Haiti and Cuba, they took their freedoms, while other Caribbean countries, they were granted their freedoms, or their freedoms are arranged. Our independence was arranged, okay? And this, now, if we had taken our freedoms like Haiti, maybe what Jamaica would be like Haiti today. Okay, but we arranged our freedoms within the interests of our colonial masters, taking on, continuing this Britishness, so in a sense, yes, systematically, we asked our systematically, and I said to you, but it was the colonization of the Caribbean was a project which was successful.
Yes, very much so. Very much so.
It's to the point where our colonial masters could have granted freedoms and independence and leave us. And whatever they have left continues today.
Exactly. And going on that theme, what do you see, like looking ahead, what are the key opportunities or challenges facing the Jamaican religious traditions, both within Jamaica and, of course, within the diaspora?
In terms of African traditions, is, as I said to you, the fact that our education system is mainly religious. Is facilitated and administered by the church. A lot of the schools are church schools. Many of the colleges are church-sponsored colleges. I might get into trouble when I say this to you. I hope I don't. But I should not. I live in a country that facilitates free speech, I think. I'm going to say this to you. I'm going to make a statement. I went to Jamaica Theological College, Jamaica Theological Seminary, and some time ago they asked me to serve as the secretary. But I'm no longer the secretary. I was the secretary or the vice president or something. I served on the steering committee as one of the seniors, on the executive steering committee of the PASS Student Association, or the alumni. And the PASS Student Association at Jamaica Theological Seminary, we're very involved in the college. But the Jamaica Theological Seminary is transitioning to a university. It wants to become a university. And so they're having a series of conversations. One of the things that I got in trouble for was the Jamaica Theological Seminary was started by the missionary church in Jamaica. But I said to the committee, I did relate to formulating a university, because I was part of a discussion about creating a university at Jamaica Theological Seminary. I said to them, well, if you want to become a university, you're going to have to change your slogan. You're going to have to change your name. You're going to have to change your slogan. Okay, listen to it. The motto is this: that I may know him and that I may make him known. I said, we have to be inclusive. That is not an inclusive statement. Well, I probably, you should say that I may know God and that I may make God known. Oh, that was, that has created problems with me and many people. In fact, I was supposed to teach Christianity today, but and they asked me not to teach. Some people had a problem with me teaching that course because they said I was going to be too liberal. They said I was going to be too liberal, which is quite too radical or liberal, but radical. You said I was being too radical. And you asked me about what the challenge was Afro-Caribbean traditions and beliefs in Jamaica. And I said to you, when I say to you, if it were so difficult for them to change the motto to, because they're becoming a university, a university is supposed to draw students from all walks of life. Mm-hmm. So therefore, we have to facilitate and project that. I say to you, that particular instance suggests how difficult it is going to be. Now, you cannot back down and you cannot sit down as individuals. We are being hypocritical if we continue to look down upon African traditions, because we are committing the same crime that our colonial masters committed. We're discriminating against other people's faith and other, because there are people who practice African Caribbean beliefs in Jamaica. There are many people who practice it today. And I believe that it is important for us to facilitate that. But the challenge is we are going up against a very British Jamaican, because the more British you are, mm-hmm. that's the hallmark of yes. your of society, of the elite. The more command of the English language and you're on base of the church that you go, you know what I mean? But you know, mainline churches were said to be liberal, but I don't know, were said to be conservative, were the conservative church. But mainline churches are a little bit more embracing the conservative church. I mean, the Pentecostal churches and the evangelical churches that are growing in Jamaica, they have more people in their services, in their churches. But you know, but religion, the Western religion is very competitive. It's based in a capitalist structure that is based on competition and franchises, and you know, and our economic system, our political system is very competitive. Our human nature, we are very competitive. So, and that nature have spilled over into our lifestyle and our traditions. And so I said to you, people who, you have many Caribbean people lead congregations who they are afraid to lose, because they would lose their authority, they lose their power, they lose their privilege. So there are those people who have made something out of this Eurocentric faith, and which has created their positions for them, okay, and they are benefiting from that, and they are unwilling to share their power and to lose members and or for their faith to be affected. So of course, you know, so that's also part of the challenge. We have inherited a very capitalist structure that is very highly competitive. That competitive spirit is also embedded within our truth, which is part of the institutions that many of us run and administer and operate. And if we were to embrace African traditions, it may threaten our following, it may threaten our position. So, and that is also part of the issue.
No, I mean, you mentioned some themes here that at least we can have the conversation. This is a movement that is going in this direction. But again, the challenges of what it faced is what has always been there from the very beginning within the Caribbean anyways. But
yes,
as we close out, Ronaldo, what would be, I guess, your final thoughts for any of the listeners at this point in time?
My final thought is that And I'm going to make I actually made a statement some time ago, and I think I need to. I sent an email to my student, and I said, I can't find it. It was always the plan for the Caribbean and for black and brown people to be uncompetitive. Part of making a people uncompetitive is part of mitigating, minimizing, and diluting their identity. And so the study I'm doing is on valuing African identity. Because when we begin to value who we are, we have to do research. You know, we have to start going back. Means we have to go back and revisit who we are. Because of course, I grew up in a Jamaica, and can I tell you, this over the past 10 years, I have learned so much about myself, my history, and if I did go off on a tangent and do it, I would not have been armed with the kind of intelligence I have today. Because growing up in Jamaica as a child, I always looked down upon Afro-Caribbean traditions. I thought that people from Africa never had religion. They never had any kind of tradition or civility. They weren't civilized, they were cannibalistic. And so, in fact, what my takeaway from doing history was that we should have been happy that the European came and rescued us. Okay. We should have been happy that they gave us sophistication. Yes? Because we weren't sophisticated. They dignified us with language and with religion, with the right religion. Yes? That was the, and I thought that growing up, and that was also part of the evangelistic, when you study the message of the, when you study evangelism and how evangelism is done, you might think that I'm a heretic. I'm an ordained minister by the United Church in Jamaica and Cayman Islands, just so you guys know. I'm an ordained. And I said to people, I don't believe in, what's the ultimate of all things? I write. The ultimate of all things is that we live as one in reality with all of our individuality. A man said once, you label me, you negate me. So if I, Kaiga guy said that, if you ask me, are you a Christian? I would usually frown upon those questions, but I would say, yes, I am a Christian. But I said, I am a Christian because of what I've been exposed to and how I've grown. However, I said to people, but I am not a Christian in the everyday sense of the word. I am a Christian. I accept Christianity because that is the lens through which I relate to God, because I have more information about that. Okay, because God is unlimited and I'm limited, but God, I am not receiving worship, it is God. Okay, if God is than that which nothing greater can be conceived and imagined, God is unlimited. That means God is intelligent and he knows that we are limited by what we give back to him. So what he shares with us, he made us in such a unique way that what we put out is based on, it's within the uniqueness of what we're putting in. Because God is looking back, he's seeing all this beautiful, colorful world. But I say to you, I use Christianity as a lens to relate to God, because that's how I was, it's just a lens. It's a lens by which I use. So yes, I latch on to that. And I believe that God is in his infinite wonders and his mercies and beauty, and the fact that he is way above us and he's vast. He's God. Of course he's going to. I might be making a mistake using Christianity as a lens, but God is unlimited. He understands that I am but a fly. If that is my understanding of God, if that's my theology, then I understand that God understands and is okay with us not our ignorance based on our limitation, because we are limited, yet he created us still to understand and to know him and to relay back to him what, so I am, so, and that's my perspective. So I use Christianity as a lens, but what I don't do is to privilege. I never privilege my position. I never privilege. In fact, what I believe, and I'm writing a book on secrets to unlocking divine intervention, where I am studying various different faiths. In fact, there are people that do cow worship. And there is a guy that does a cow worship in Massachusetts. I'm supposed to be going to Massachusetts to do some kind of anthropological study, to journey with this guy, because I want to learn about this cow worship. Because that's how he makes sense of reality and of life. So, but that's what he said. And I said, do you find value in that? How do you see the divine interacting with you? And then, because I want to, and then I'm going to, and then I want to find out about Obia. Okay, there are people that, I'm not going to look down on Obia, but there are people who find valuable Obia. It gives them, it helps to balance them. There are those who might misuse it. But as well, people misuse scriptures, misuse Jesus, misuse the Bible to enslave a whole set of people. Okay? So my challenge to people is that I pray that we don't commit the same crime that those who had enslaved us committed. Let us not be hypocritical or duplicitous. Let us be embracing of others and our African tradition, because united we stand, divided we fall. And part of reclaiming our dignity, part of our competitiveness, part of our development as a people and as a Caribbean nation is by restoring our African values. Israel became a nation again. And that is how people in the diaspora and all over the world will become a stalwart juggernaut of the world.
Thank you so much for your time, Ronaldo. I really appreciate it, and for coming on and speaking about this, because again, not a narrative that people want to speak about sometimes. And to connect the two different types of themes that are here, that people may not seem that they really are one, and we really need to recognize and use that to empower ourselves. But thank you, I really appreciate it.
By the way, I said something in the pre-session about Afro-Caribbean tradition, just so for your viewers to understand, when we talk about Afro-Caribbean traditions, we're not just talking about African traditions that the slave tradition that the tradition that the slave brought here to Africa. Yeah. That find expression in Afro-Caribbean tradition. We're also talking about indigenous traditions like the Arawakan people, so the Taino people. And many of their traditions were mixed in with the Maroons, who were Africans who were left over from the Spanish who had freed them when the British. Okay, so please remember that many of the traditions of the Afro-Caribbean tradition is a hybrid tradition, a mixture of African tradition, European tradition, and American Indian tradition, which now we are learning that many Jamaicans and Caribbean people have some kind of genealogical relationship with the indigenous people from the Caribbean.
So
we're learning more about that. So thank you.
Definitely are. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Take care.
Hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please make sure to like, follow, subscribe, and write a review for the episode wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you.